This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. Yesterday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with their monthly numbers on how many Americans are working, and the good news was more than 200,000 jobs were added for the fourth straight month, the first time we've seen that pattern in 15 years. And the numbers also show that we've gotten the Americans who are working back up to the same numbers they were at about 5 years ago when we were crawling out of the beginning of this horrible recession. But inside those numbers are other numbers that have both good and bad news to them. And here to help analyze that is my brother Seth, the former acting secretary of labor, who's now of counsel to Dentons and a professor at Cornell University. Hi, Seth. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, Paul. Thanks.
So it's good news and bad news here. Tell me what the good news is and then break the bad news to me.
Well, the good news is exactly what you said, and that is that we know now that the large job growth numbers in April and also in February and March were not a fluke, that we've now had four consecutive months of job growth over 200,000 per month. As you said, that's the first time that's happened since back in the Clinton administration. In 2014, we're averaging job growth that's about 10% higher than the job growth we were getting per month in 2013, so that's really good. And let me say, a lot of economists were quietly quite worried about the decline in gross domestic product. Our economy actually shrank in the first 3 months of 2014. These very good job growth numbers suggest that that will not continue into the second quarter of 2014. You don't create 500,000 jobs over 2 months if your economy is shrinking. So there's a lot of good news in the report.
But
there's also some bad news in the report, and it's one is a very, very long-term story. The other is a story that I think is causing a lot of us to really worry. The long-term problem is with wages. Wages just are not going up fast enough. There was an increase from April to May of a nickel in the average hourly wage, about 2% year over year, just a smidgen ahead of inflation. So that means that workers don't really have additional money in their pockets. We're going to have to see double or triple that amount of wage growth for workers really to see an improvement in their standard of living, and also for our economy to grow. You know, our economy is 70% built on consumer spending. If middle-class families and working-class families don't have money in their pockets, they can't spend and our economy can't grow. But even the more troubling piece of this is last month we saw a big drop in the number of people who were either working or out looking for work, and a big increase in the number of people who had just given up hope. We had hoped to see that rebound in May, and we didn't. What that tells us is there's still a very, very, very large population of people who were hit by the tidal wave of the Great Recession and just have never been able to get back to the beach. Long-term unemployed people, discouraged workers, people who never entered the labor market, young kids coming out of college who just never went out and looked for a job, those folks are just not finding work. They are not coming back in. There has been a decline in those numbers, but the decline really has been because they're quitting, not because they're finding jobs.
We also have a problem with people who are finding jobs, finding them for a lot less pay.
Yeah, that's a big part of the reason why wages is not going up. You know, what's happened in the American economy over the course of the last decade or two is really a hollowing out of middle-class jobs. You know, a lot of middle-skill, middle-wage jobs, construction jobs, manufacturing jobs, other jobs that a lot of us are familiar with, sort of building our country in the 50s and 60s, those jobs are gone. They've been replaced either by technology or they've been offshored in a lot of cases. Mostly technology is the cause of that happening. And so the people in those jobs really had two options. One is try and get more skill so that you compete for higher skill jobs, and those are higher wage jobs. But a lot of those people don't have an option, and they're slipping into lower wage, often retail sector, service sector jobs that pay a lot less. And that's a real challenge for our economy because it's a real threat to our middle class. The middle class is the bulwark of the American economy. That's where the spending comes from that drives growth in our economy.
And yet yesterday, both the Dow and the S&P were up after this jobs report came out, telling us that corporations, at least in the eyes of shareholders, are doing much better. What's going on there?
Right. Well, I think there are two things going on. One is sort of there's a little bit of irrational exuberance going on in the markets right now, a lot of enthusiasm, partly because the United States is really still the best place to invest in the world. A lot of economies around the world having serious problems. Europe is the European Central Bank just had to take an extreme measure in order to keep their economy growing. China is not growing as fast as it has been growing. So investing in the American economy still makes sense, and so that's driving prices up. But there is also a direct relationship between the fact that workers' wages are not going up and profits are going up. The money that used to go to workers when productivity increased, when they did a better job producing American products and making more money for their employers, workers used to get a share of that money. That's not happening anymore. The overwhelming majority of the gains that we're getting in our economy from economic growth and from productivity are going to the top 1% or the top 0.1%, and that's showing in profits on Wall Street.
I want to go back to something you mentioned before about the impact of tech. Technology on people's jobs. It has always been my theory that companies hire the number of people they need to do the job to make or service whatever it is that they're selling to the public. You don't have 100 people hired when you only have jobs for 50 people or responsibilities for 50 people. And consequently, or conversely rather, you don't hire 50 people when you need 100 people's worth of work being done. But now we seem to have a situation where there just are fewer opportunities for people. So these companies may be using technology to increase their profits and don't need the humans involved. Am I off base here?
No, I think that's exactly right. And let me give you two examples. I went back when I was the acting Secretary of Labor. I took a tour of a steel plant in Cleveland, Ohio. This is a steel plant that had been shut down during the recession, and thousands and thousands and thousands of workers had been laid off. But it got started again. It got a big infusion of capital. It got started again, and it was a fantastically high-tech place. And one of the really remarkable things, as you walked around the floor of this plant with the steel whizzing over your head and the machines cranking and cranking and the robots doing their work, is you hardly ever saw a worker. The workers were no longer actually working on the machines. They were running computers that were managing the machines at a much higher rate of precision. And as a consequence, employment in that plant, even though production was much higher than it had been before the recession, employment was much, much lower, significantly less than half than what you'd find there. Another example is for people who work in offices, your listeners who work in offices, ask yourself how many secretaries they find now, how many people they find in the typing pool, how many people do they find in the word processing department. Those don't exist anymore, or they are being phased out, or you have one secretary for four or five or six people, because we are all doing our own typing, we're doing our own emailing, we're answering on our phones, we have voicemail, we have smartphones that can reach us just about anywhere, we have online travel services and other services. So many, many, many jobs are disappearing. I read a study that showed that right now, 47% of American jobs with existing technologies could be eliminated. They just don't need to be around anymore. They're like buggy whip manufacturing jobs. You just don't need them because they could be replaced by technology. Now, that doesn't mean they will be, because there are cost issues and there's timeliness issues and equality issues, but that technology is out there. Half of American jobs are at risk, and that's after all of these jobs that have been eliminated over the last 20 or 30 years, and even more that have been sent overseas.
I've only got a minute left here, Seth, and I want to ask you about the minimum wage. Seattle has moved to $15 an hour minimum wage, and of course everybody's saying the sky will be falling in Seattle. I think we call that rain, not the economy. But is there going to be any more movement on this elsewhere? Certainly not at the federal level in an election year, but anywhere else where minimum wages can be increased?
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to see increases in the minimum wage in states and cities around the country. There is a big push, particularly among fast food workers, to raise their wage to $15 an hour. The McDonald's CEO this week announced that McDonald's is going to support an increase in the national minimum wage, apparently over the objections of their franchisees. Cities around the country are debating living wage increases. Governor Cuomo in New York has talked about, even though New York just raised its minimum wage to $9 an hour, supporting a further increase to $10.10 an hour. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think this movement is picking up steam. It's because wages for and incomes for most Americans have been flat or declining, stagnant for decades. We're still seeing that in the numbers. And
we hope to see a change in that sometime in the near future. Seth Harris, my brother and distinguished scholar at Cornell University and of Council of Gentons. Thanks so much for joining me on America Weekend.
America Weekend.